I'd like to call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, February 2nd, 2018. We're meeting today in room 205 in the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phone as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Geisel, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Wilson, and Senator Begich is excused. This afternoon, we'll be taking up, once again, Senate Bill 128, Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund by Senator Geisel. We heard the bill and took public testimony on Wednesday, January 31st. And at this time, we left it open for public testimony, and we'll take additional testimony today. And are there anyone else in the audience today that would like to testify on Senate Bill 128? Just questions. No, thanks. All right, seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Are there any other further comments from the bill sponsor, Senator Geisel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wondered if Dr. Butler could come forward again. Hi, Dr. Butler. So one of the questions that's being asked is why only 25% of the remaining, you know, it's a big pie, it's cut in half, and that half is cut to 25%. The other 25% goes into the general fund.
Right.
Can you explain why the whole 50% doesn't simply go into the education and treatment fund?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Geisel, for the record, my name is Jay Butler, Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. As we heard in public testimony on Wednesday, additional allocations to the fund could be used specifically to support after-school programs. So that other 25% certainly could be specifically channeled towards programs that would support some of those after-school activities and support really focused on youth prevention and prevention of initiation.
So just for clarification then, what you're saying is the legislature has the appropriative authority to begin with, and while it's defined as 25%, the legislature could exceed that if it chose to, or if there's justification for it.
Yes, Senator Geisel, through the chair, that's my understanding also. Using the tobacco fund as an example, the tax revenue goes into the fund, but the actual appropriation is done by the legislature through the usual budgetary process.
Great. I did have one other question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
And probably not so much a question. So today in the ADN, there was an article, some pregnant women are okay with using pot, but who's risk? And I really appreciated the article because it called out the cognitive changes in the infant's brain and the THC that is detected in breast milk and in the newborn. I did, by the way, Mr. Chair, email this article to all the committee members, too. And so I really see the education needing to go even earlier than education, but thinking of a grown child, right? And by chance, I happen to meet with the All-Alaska Pediatric Partnership today, who are certainly working in that direction. What comments do you have about that?
Senator Geisel, through the chair, that is one of the areas where we have concern. As we talked about the other day, we have concerns about driving under the influence, concerns about initiation during late childhood and adolescence, and prenatal exposure is also of concern. While there is probably less outcome data, there certainly is some that's concerning. And as we understand the biology of the developing brain, knowing that the cannabinoid receptors are present in the brain very early in development, there are actually endogenous cannabinoids that bind to those receptors that are important for brain development. There's a lot we don't know about the exogenous cannabinoids, such as what would be taken into the bloodstream through either smoking or through ingestion. and potentially influence that brain development. So it's an area that is certainly of concern. We have probably not as much data as we would like, but it's also a vulnerable time where I think a fairly precautionary approach is appropriate. One of the things that has worried me especially is there are some animal data, and again I stress it's animal data, not human data, that have suggested that exposure to exogenous cannabinoids may increase the susceptibility to the effects of alcohol exposure during fetal development. So while there's a lot we don't know, I think it's enough that would really make me want to caution use during pregnancy.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, take a brief at ease. Bill sponsor at this time from committee members. Seeing or hearing none, is there a motion to move this bill out of committee?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 128, version 30-LS1069A from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Seeing or hearing none, Senate Bill 128 is moved from committee with the understanding that... Let me take it at ease. What's this? Back on the record, seeing or hearing none, Senate Bill 128 is moved from committee with the understanding that legislative legal is authorized to make any necessary technical or conforming adjustments. We'll take a brief, short break to sign the paperwork. Back on the record, next we'll hear and take public testimony on Senate Bill 181, Department of Health and Social Services centralized registry background checks by Senate rules at the request of the governor. At this time, we'll welcome Stacy Crayley, Department of Law, to the table to present the bill. And online to answer questions are Margaret Brody, Department of Health and Social Services, Director of Healthcare Services, Kathleen Monfredi from Department of Corrections, Chief Criminal and Records and Identification Bureau. And at this time, Ms. Crayley, the floor is yours. Remember to state your name for the record and affiliate department.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stacy Crayley, Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And first, I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee for hearing this bill, Senate Bill 81, which relates to the criminal background check process and licensing statutes that are administered by the Department of Health and Social Services. As a starting point, I'd like to provide a kind of a broad overview of what the legislation does, and then I'm happy to go through a sectional analysis as the bill currently exists. So, sound like a plan? Okay. As a starting point, participation in federal programs such as Medicare and foster care require states to conduct criminal background checks for licensure or payment for services. The Department of Health and Social Services has been doing background checks for many years, and in 2005, the legislature codified Alaska Statute 4705-300 during that process. That statute requires background checks for all persons who are paid in whole or in part by the Department of Health and Social Services. For example, if you are a foster parent or your personal care attendant, to provide Medicaid, that sort of thing. Since that time, a background check has been that is required is comprised of a two-part process. The first part is a fingerprint-based review of criminal history, both state and federal and nationwide, and that's administered through DHSS with an agreement and process through the Department of Public Safety. It also consists of a check of various databases, such as the Office of Inspector General Exclusion List, which is a list that identifies individuals who have been excluded from participation in Medicare or Medicaid because of fraud or abuse of that program, sex offender databases, both state and national, certified nurse aid registries, which is administered and managed by the Board of Nursing here in Alaska. Those database checks are used to identify civil actions that are inconsistent with licensure or the ability to provide care to vulnerable adults or children. However, as most statutes, as we work to operationalize the statute and to do what we can through our regulatory authority that the legislature gave us, we have identified over the course of the past 15 years a number of language issues that we think need to be fixed. And some of those things can be fixed through regulation, and we have fixed those through regulation, but there are some things that just have to be fixed in statute, and that's why we're here with Senate Bill 81. We also identified a number, part of the process of identifying some of that stuff was both internal reviews by our office and then also inquiries through the Ombudsman's office that identified a number of gaps and difficulties with the statutory scheme as well. So what this statute does very broadly is it clarifies what constitutes a civil history check or a civil history check. Currently in state law, there are two registries referenced in state law. One's called the Central Registry and one's called the Centralized Registry, and that's very confusing to those of us that even work in this every day and those of us that are being who come through the process. So we want to clarify that. It also clarifies that background checks, and specifically the civil history check that I've just referenced, applies to both the entity that's being that seeks licensure by the department, but also all of their employees. There's a little bit of a gap in the language, and it's not clear that those employees are subject to that same civil history check, which we think they should be. It also clarifies that the department is not required to create a standalone database. The way the statute is currently crafted, it intimates that the department will create its own civil registry or civil history database. And that was both cost prohibitive and programmatically difficult to administer when this bill was crafted, and has not happened since then. So we'd like the statute to clarify that we're not creating a database, but we're reviewing already existing databases. Finally, the bill makes a number of amendments to Title 47, Chapter 32, which is the licensing statutes in DHSS. And it does three important things. The first thing it does is it allows the department to share information on concurrent investigations with law enforcement. So if there's an event in a licensed facility and law enforcement and licensing go to that event at the same time, that they can share information without having to go get a search warrant or a court order or any other sort of legal process. But that's limited to concurrent investigations. Secondly, what it does is, as we've asked the legislature through these amendments, to allow the division to do licensing investigations to share information between themselves. Originally, the housing of the licensing functions were in primarily in one division, and there was a little bit in the second division. Now they're in a number of divisions, and we need to be able to communicate with each other. So this would clarify that and break down that wall of confidentiality. Finally, the last thing that it does, and one of the most important things this bill does, is it clarifies that if an individual commits or abuses, neglects, or exploits an individual in care, that the individual, not the entity, can be subject to an investigation. So the example that I've provided or that I think provides a good example of this is if I'm an employed by an assisted living home and I abuse or neglect an elder in care, right now, the only person that can be investigated under the statute is the licensed entity, is the assisted living home for which I work. Now, they should be investigated to make sure they do the right thing, and if they do, then they'll be notified you did everything right. But I, as the actual person who committed the abuse or neglect, cannot be subject to an individual investigation. We want to amend that so that I can be investigated. I will be, if that changes, what will happen is I will be notified of the investigation. I will be allowed to challenge the findings that are made, take this onto an appeal, litigate that through due process. And ultimately, if it's determined that I had committed this offense, then my name should go on that civil registry that we've previously talked about. So very broadly, that's what the bill does. I'm happy to take any general questions, or I can go directly into a sexual analysis of whatever the committee would prefer.
Yes, Senator Von Himhoff.
Thank you. So just one of the thoughts, when I was reading the past audits on Department of Education and Department of Health and Social Services, one of the things that they brought up in recommendations was, I believe, doing background checks for teachers. And they said, you know, there's already other departments that do background checks, and I think they referenced Department of like law or criminal for public safety officers. And they said, why not just utilize, why not deed, stop doing these background checks and duplicate this process, since the state already has this very robust background check service in another department. So have you guys thought about combining efforts across departments? So one department of law or department of public safety does the background checks on behalf of all state employees versus each department doing background checks for their employees.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'd like to defer this question and refer this question to Kathy Monfredo, who works for the Department of Public Safety. I think she will be able to explain the limitations on the FBI criminal background checks that prohibit us from doing that in great part.
Kathy, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am.
Did you hear the question, or do you need that to be repeated?
Yes. Through the chair, the problem with having one central site location to do background checks for a variety of purposes is that violates the FBI's law on how national background checks can be used. They can only be used for a given authorized statutory purpose. It has to be a statute. There has to be fingerprints have to be involved in the background check, and so they do allow now checks to be done for multiple purposes if that's known at the time of the application. If it's somebody's going to be a school teacher today and then a daycare worker 3 months from now, that FBI requires two separate checks be completed.
Thank you, Kathy. And can you state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Catherine Monfreda. I'm Chief of the Criminal Records and Identification Bureau for the Department of Public Safety.
Follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff?
Yes, thank you. So I assume when you're referring to statute and saying FBI, you're talking a national statute. This is not a state statute, but this is a national statute. Is that correct?
Correct. It's Public Law 92-544. That governs national background checks.
So, okay, thank you, through the chair. So essentially what you're saying then is the exact same background check is done via multiple departments, potentially on the same person if they move through, you know, different jobs, let's say. But regardless, many state agencies have staff and staff and system set up to duplicate the exact same behavior on their particular department's employees.
Through the chair, I think I'm not sure I understand your question completely, but most of the agencies have different criteria for their licensing, so it's not really a one size fits all. And the other point I would like to make is that you also the background check is really only good the day that it's received. People are arrested daily, and so to have a delay in using the background check could be a risk.
Thank you. Yeah. Hello? One more. Yeah, I'm not necessarily suggesting that we do a background check once and then be done with it forever. I'm just suggesting that we can centralize background checks among all state employees, but I also understand that you're quoting or citing statute that prohibits the state from doing that. So, okay, thank you.
The 92-544 requires that the results can be shared, but they have to be for exactly the same purpose.
Okay. Any other questions at this time? If you want to proceed with the sectional, that would be wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, this is Stacey Crayley from the Department of Law. So I'll run through the sectional pretty quickly as the bill is currently drafted. Section 1, this section would make conforming edits to rename the centralized registry to the civil registry to avoid confusion under the current law, as I previously mentioned, of the two competing registries. Section 2 and 3 of these sections would amend Alaska Statute 4705.310D and 4732.310D to clarify that barrier crimes apply to individuals as well as to entities. Section 4, this section would amend 47 05, that's a typo in the sectional, I apologize, 310E, to allow an individual to seek a background check. Currently, it's not, we do allow individuals to request background checks as a matter of efficiency, but the statute kind of indicates that individuals can't apply on their own, and we'd like to clarify that. This section also would remove the request of the, at the request of the Department of Public Safety, the designation of the Department of Health and Social Services as a criminal justice agency, and the Department of Public Safety have a, has an edit that they, or an amendment they would like to propose to address that as well. Section 5 amends 4705.310F to make it clear that the Department of Health and Social Services may, in addition to the exceptions in the barrier crime provisions, allow for a variance process to a barrier crime. Section 6, this section would amend 4705.310H to address how non-licensed providers, such as a relative who's receiving payment by the Office of Children's Services, is treated under the statute. As I mentioned earlier, the statute contemplates that you're paid in whole or in part by the department. You have to have a background check. Well, federal law requires that if you're providing care by the Office of Children's Services but you're not getting paid, i.e. you're a relative placement, you also have to have a background check. So that's a carve-out that we need to make sure we capture. So this amendment makes it clear that such providers, while not being paid by DHSS, are still subject to a background check. This section 7, this section makes conforming edits to 4705.310I to rename the centralized registry to the civil registry. Section 8, this section would add a new section to 4705.310 to address the immunity provisions for reporting during the background check process. Section 9 provides a similar framework for the civil registry checks for background checks, so they mirror each other in statute. Previously, they were a mix and match and a hybrid of the two, and this creates two standalone statutes. So the same process for a criminal background check applies for a civil history check. Section 10, this section would repeal and reenact how the department will review existing registries rather than create yet another separate standalone database. This section also identifies what the Department of Health and Social Services is looking for in terms of civil findings or civil histories that are inconsistent with licensure or payment. Section 11, this would amend the current immunity section to reflect the change to civil registry to centralized registry. Section 12 would establish a new section to address the ability to seek a variance for a civil finding or a criminal background check under the chapter. And how to appeal that decision if you disagree with any decisions that are made by the department. Section 13 amends 4705.390 subparagraph 6 to expand the definition of entity to include an individual service provider. Section 14, this section renamed the central registry maintained by the Office of Children's Services, their ORCA database, as a child protection registry to avoid confusion. It clarifies what is maintained on that registry, including substantiated findings under 4710 or 4717. Section 15, this is a new subsection that would clarify that before substantiated findings can be placed on a centralized, on the child protection registry, the person must be afforded notice of a finding and an opportunity to challenge that, codifying the due process requirements. Section 16 is a conforming edit to 4732.010C, replacing the centralized registry with the civil registry. Section 17 would amend 4732 to provide authority to Department of Health and Social Services to consider prior adverse licensing findings in determining whether to grant or deny a license or whether to place a condition on an existing license. Section 18 would add a section to make it clear that when there is an allegation that an employee or an individual affiliated with an entity is alleged to have engaged in behavior that would impact health, safety, and welfare of a resident, they may be investigated. This goes back to what I was speaking about earlier. Further defines the due process that would be required if such an investigation took place, and how that process would happen. Section 19 is a technical fix that would clarify when formal hearings are required when an enforcement action is taken after a licensing investigation. Section 20 adds a new section to clarify that when law enforcement is investigating a crime that is also the subject of a concurrent licensing investigation, that material gathered by Department of Health and Social Services can be shared with law enforcement as a matter of law. Section 21 clarifies that all divisions who do licensing work that implement Title 47, Chapter 32, may share information with each other for the purposes of administering the licensing programs. Section 22 repeals references to provisions of the current law that are no longer necessary or be determined superfluous. Specifically, this section repealed the reference to the Civil Registry when doing background checks, references to DHSS as a criminal justice agency. These are the conforming edits from the previous 21 sections. Section 23 is an applicability section for purposes of applying criminal and civil background checks before and after the effective date of this act. Section 24 provides information or instruction to the revisor regarding title changes, and Section 25 provides for an effective immediate effective date.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any additional questions from the committee? I do have a couple.
Okay.
One was on Section 20, page 10, starting from line 10.
Section 20. Section 10?
Section 20, page 10.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Starting from line 10. Mm-hmm. When we, and I brought this question before upon sort of the licensing and sharing information, having shared information, we talked about making sure that was just for concurrent, but that's not really, language isn't really in the bill to make sure that that licensing is not sharing past information upon that provider with law enforcement in terms of the investigation. Is there a way to have that specified or clarified a little bit more in the section?
Through the chair, I believe so. I think we could, I think as I read it, when it looks at, is investigating a crime that's also the subject of a licensing investigation, I read that as being a concurrent investigation. But I think the we could put clarifying language, an amendment to clarify that would be appropriate.
Okay, thank you. And then my other question was sort of about the variance issues and making sure that that folks that do have variances are be able to transfer those a little bit more easier through the system. And I didn't know if that question was answered through regulations. I'm just waiting for a final answer on sort of the my variance.
Through the chair, yes, the issue, regulations that implement the existing statutes were amended and I think went into effect on August 1st of 2017. We reframed the variance process and did a number of things within that variance process, one of which is we created what I'll call an expedited variance process because there's certain things that just need to be sent up to the commissioner's office quickly because there's no question that a variance should be granted or should be considered by the commissioner. So we created an expedited process. We also created a system whereby variances that are granted for people who are providing similar services but working for multiple agencies can use the same variance for multiple agencies. So that was all handled through the regulatory process.
Okay. Thank you. Any other additional questions? Thank you for your testimony at this time.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll open up for public testimony. First, we'll start with folks in the room here in Juneau. I believe Kate Burkhart from the State Ombudsman's Office. You want to come state your name for test? Yeah. Yes. You may begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kate Burkhart. I'm the Alaska State Ombudsman. Our office has provided written comment on the bill, so I won't go through the written comment verbatim, but I did want to provide some comment. Before I do so, this is the first time I am appearing in front of the committee in this role, which is different from in the past, so I want to provide some context. The Alaska State Ombudsman is a nonpartisan, independent, and objective organization that investigates citizen complaints about state agencies. And so when we have the opportunity to inform your policymaking with the information and recommendations from our investigations, we try to do so. We are not an advocacy organization. We are a neutral organization. And the information provided on SB 81 is meant to inform your processes and not necessarily to advocate for the Ombudsman's recommendations in lieu of what's in the bill. I did want to raise some of the issues that were addressed in the investigation and the report that was issued in 2016. The report also provides you an idea of how the background check program can affect people as they move through that process in the attempt to secure a caregiving position. The background check program is a critical component to ensuring that the people that serve vulnerable Alaskans are the appropriate sorts of people. And so SB 81 provides an opportunity to strengthen that program. And if we have the ability to inform your process to do that, we'd like to do that. Ms. Crayley talked about how the background check program relies on existing registries of information and not a standalone database or registry, and that was one of the issues that the Ombudsman has previously investigated. SB 81 provides the opportunity to be really clear that this is a background check program that uses existing sources of information. And so as it's written right now, it talks about a civil registry, which could lead people to think there's some magic list over here, but there's really not. And so just being really clear about that. SB 81 also speaks to standards related to civil barriers. All of my comments are related to the aspects of the bill related to civil barriers because our investigation did not look at criminal barriers. And if we haven't investigated something, I don't have an opinion about it. And so we would remark that if the decision is made to use a substantiated report of harm, child abuse or neglect, as a basis for finding a civil barrier, understanding that often reports of harm can be substantiated without a child in need of aid proceeding being initiated. And parents have the opportunity to challenge that substantiation, but they don't always. If someone said, yes, we found you left your car, and your child in the car, Kate, and that was really bad, but we're not going to do anything else, I probably would just heave a great big sigh and move on, and then not realize that up to 10 years from now, I might be barred from a caregiving form of employment. So just thinking through the policy about what gives rise to a civil barrier. And then making sure that Alaskans have adequate notice of the impact of being found to have a substantiated report of harm and how that would affect them in the background check program. And so ensuring that whatever notice is given to parents or individuals in that situation is really clear, that this could have an impact on your ability to pass a background check for the next up to 10 years. So there's more conversation about that in our written comment, but it's something to consider as you decide what is the level for a civil barrier and then how to ensure that Alaskans understand I might want to challenge that substantiation if I ever want to be a daycare provider or if I ever want to be a relative caregiver for a child in custody. There was conversation earlier about the variance process. The Ombudsman investigation explored how someone would apply for a variance if they didn't have access to the information in their child protection record, which is now closed, that led to the civil barrier. And so thinking through if you're going to have a meaningful opportunity to secure a variance, you probably need access to that information. And so SB 81 provides an opportunity to make that really clear, that if you're seeking a variance and you need access to that closed CPS record, that you have access. So again, this is a really important program. Our office spends a lot of time investigating complaints related to the child protection system, so we're very familiar with all of the issues that are in play there. We also receive complaints related to all the services that Alaskans with disabilities and older Alaskans depend on, and so we understand how critical this program is. And if our work has the opportunity to inform your process to help make it a better program, we're happy to do so.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Burkhart at this time? Senator Geisel.
Well, I just wondered, Ms. Burkhart, you shared this with the department, and they're looking at these suggestions?
Senator Geisel, through the chair, as Ms. Crayley spoke about, there was a substantial effort to go through the regulations related to the background check program, and regulatory processes take quite a while. Those were adopted last fall, late summer. They did include a tiered approach to civil barriers, and it was a pretty big overhaul. And I think in their response, now it was, of course, before my time, but in their response to the previous ombudsman, they said that they would use their regulatory process to consider some of the recommendations made. And so I think that's part of it. There was also a bill very similar to SB 81 that was put forward a session and a half, last session, so a year and a half ago. And I think that was also an attempt to address some of our concerns. As written, SB 81, I think one of our big concerns was there is no actual registry. And SB 81 still refers to a registry, so that would be one thing to think about to make sure Alaskans understand there's not going to be a new list, or we're not maintaining a list. We're actually checking existing lists.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on your new role with the state. Is there anyone else here in the room willing to testify on Senate Bill 81? Seeing or hearing none, and no one else has signed up online, we will close public testimony at this time, and we'll see if the bill's sponsor would like to come back up for any other closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Stacey Crayley with the Department of Law. I think the only thing I'd like to add is, in addition to some of the comments that Ms. Burkhart indicated, is that we have reviewed her letter and we have taken it to heart. We have evaluated her concerns, both in terms of what we have already done through the regulatory process, what we could do still administratively and programmatically, and have recognized some things that could be improved, and appreciate those suggestions. And further, we are more than happy to make additional amendments or suggestions to this bill. Our goal with this bill is to improve the program and to make the language as clear and unassailable as it possibly can be, and we get rid of some of those confusions. So we have proposed a number of suggestions, and we'll continue to work with the Ombudsman's Office about how we can improve this bill, and hopefully we'll come back with a compromise that everybody can live with. There are some policy considerations and differences of opinion that we may not come to the same conclusions with. And at that point, we will explain those differences, and you know, the legislature will decide what policy that the government's going to take, and that's your role. But we'd like to have the opportunity to spend some time to work with the Ombudsman's Office to come back to the committee with some clarifying language that we think everybody will be much more happy with.
Thank you. Senator Geisel.
Yes, follow up, Mr. Chair. So I have here in my packet an amendment that was offered on the House side, I think to the House version. Can you talk about that?
Through the chair, I'm going to defer again to Ms. Monfreda, who is with the Department of Public Safety. This is the conforming edit that needed to come in after we took out the reference to criminal justice agency, but she can explain the need for it more precisely.
Ms. Monfreda, if you can state your name for the record, and you're still with us?
There I am. They unmuted me now. For the record, my name is Kathy Monfreda. I'm Criminal Records and Identification Bureau Chief with the Alaska Department of Public Safety. The amendment that we're asking for is essentially a housekeeping issue. As I mentioned earlier when I was testifying, Public Law, Federal Public Law 92-544 spells out what needs to be in legislation in order for a state statute to be approved by the Attorney General of the United States to seek national background check results. The way that they have set this up in the past is they amended Alaska Statute 1262-400, which includes a list of all of the statutes that have been approved. And I discovered, looking at a different bill earlier this year, that for some reason 1262-400 was never amended when 4705 was enacted. So it's really just to conform with what the FBI is requiring, so that the statute will continue to be approved by the Attorney General of the United States for the background checks on those various purposes that are listed in 1262-400-8019.
I'll let Senator Geisel.
Thank you. So help me make sure that I understand then. So this amendment that was offered on the House side related to AS1262.400a, subsection 19, would need to be amended into the Senate version of the bill as well. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's what we're hoping for.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, Ms. Carley, is the intention of the department to refine that CS a little bit more before bringing it back to committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
We would appreciate the time to do that.
Okay. Senator Von Imhoff.
So then you would incorporate what Senator Giesel was just talking about into the CS so we wouldn't have to do an amendment?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes.
Great.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you again for coming
Thank
and presenting
you.
This. At this time, we'll set this bill aside while the department refines the bill and works on the CS. Monday's meeting is canceled, and on Wednesday, February 7th, we'll hear and take public testimony on Senate Bill 170, the Extend Senior Benefits and Payments Program by Senator Kelly. Are there any other member closing comments at this time? Hearing seen none, we are adjourned at 2:14 p.m.